Hello there, folks. This is your host, Michael Veazey. Welcome to Amazing FBA and with the 10K Collective podcast. Today, I'm proud to introduce another one of the e-commerce leader podcast episodes that I've done recently with my co-host there, Jason Miles. Jason Miles is a Shopify expert. He's a top 1% Shopify seller and Udemy's favorite, most downloaded, most viewed e-commerce instructor. So he has a really good broad overview of e-commerce. And today I think is an important thing to look at. We're going to zoom right out, and instead of getting into very Amazon specific topics, which are of course very important for the people who sell on Amazon, we're going to zoom right out and look at the business model that you're operating as a whole and check it out. Make sure you understand what it is you're doing. And I think revising these things, we've talked recently about pivoting, revising the business model, understanding the model you're operating, and thus being able to see the risks and upsides, the threats and opportunities, the strengths and the weaknesses, is a really critical thing, particularly in challenging times, to be very aware of what you're doing, if nothing else, as a prelude to needing to pivot. So between COVID, Brexit, and America fighting China over tariffs, to name but three geopolitical events that are happening at the moment, all of us are having to reevaluate our businesses. And this is an excellent framework. I feel that Jason has a great overview of this topic and a very deep way of thinking about it. So hope you really enjoy this. If you enjoy this podcast episode, then please do go and subscribe to the sister podcast, The E-commerce Leader, which is to be found on any good podcast app, of course. And do check out the website there for the show notes, theecommerceleader.com. As I say, co-hosted with Jason Miles and myself. Enjoy the episode. We are Michael Veazey in London, England.
Jason Miles in Seattle, Washington.
More importantly, you are the owner of a thriving online business and you want to become the best e-commerce leader you can be. We're here to get you there. For show notes with links and resources mentioned today, and for other juicy resources like downloads and free mini courses, just visit our blog, theecommerceleader.com.
Michael, how you doing, man?
Yeah, I'm doing well. Enjoying our conversations. We're deep diving into some great stuff, man. So let's jump in, because you teed up the business model thing as a driver of profitability, and you gave me a vehicle metaphor, which is catnip to me. So I'm
all right. I didn't know you were a car guy, but let's go with the vehicle metaphor here. So business models, that's the topic of the day. And so obviously the business model you use is a set of sales strategies. I would define it as the sales strategies and product strategies that define your business. And obviously most people scale into one core business model, and then they'll have other things that they do that are adjacent strategies. And so that's kind of how I look at business models. It's like it's the product and the sales tactic that you're using to define what, you know, the core essence of your business. And so that's the first place to start, is the definition of a business model. Does that strike you as something that seems like a good definition, or do you have something that's different?
That's an interesting question. I guess I don't have a specifically defined way of doing it, but let me put it this way. I think it's your specifically defined way of doing things. And that has got to, for e-commerce, include the sales and product tactics. But I guess in the end, it's got to include something that's a bit unique to each business as well, because otherwise you baked in the fact that you're just going to do the same thing as everyone else.
Yeah.
And a lot of people do that in the Amazon space. They actually, from the execution side of things, do quite a solid job, although it's within one channel. And of course, there's a lot to discuss there. But on the product strategy, their marketing strategy, maybe they've outsourced stuff to VAs. But if they're using the same tactics, then I think what they're missing is at the strategic level, which is the differentiation piece. So I would define a business model a little bit more broadly.
And I would call that branding work. So I would call that second step in my conversations the branding element added to your business model.
Okay.
So that's the point of difference.
Split that up. That's interesting. Yeah. That's what is certainly a helpful way of looking at it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's define what we're talking about. So, most people who are in the e-commerce space are familiar with a good number of common models. So I have in prior work I've done and book that, I've written, that kind of thing, I think a list 16. So I put those in our, we can put them in the show notes too, but let's just rattle off a few. I started our eBay business with handmade items. That was the first thing we started selling at auction on eBay. So it was a handmade items. And of course, Etsy is the massive marketplace for handmade items now. So that's the first one that comes to my mind because it was where we started. You want to just bounce back and forth? What do you got?
Sure. I mean, the other ones that are very sort of Amazon-centered, I mean, the classic one to start with is not private label, which is what I started with, because that's just not a very sensible starting point because it involves a lot of risk and a lot of capital. So retail arbitrage is a classic starting point. Online arbitrage as well. Yeah.
Which is buying goods and then just simply reselling it. You can buy at a retail store, sell it on Amazon, which is a classic retail arbitrage.
Yeah.
You can buy on eBay and sell it on Amazon, which is online arbitrage.
Absolutely.
Or iterations of all of that.
Yeah.
So those are common models that really scaled and grew around, I would say, eBay first, and then Amazon really took them to a crazy level. Hmm. You mentioned private label, which of course is there's companies that will manufacture packaged goods and just put your brand name on it. Whatever you tell them to put on it, they'll put on it. Mm. Private label products is the reference for that. You know, the other model that's obviously there for many people is just to sell. I call it wholesale arbitrage, but it's just going and finding a manufacturer who's selling you goods at volume, and you're just the retailer on the online side.
Yeah, and by the way, I think that's a really smart thing to have as part of the mix, because a lot of people jump from retail arbitrage to private label. And I would say that wholesale has some of the characteristics of both, but is less eye-wateringly risky and capital intensive, at least to start with. Obviously, if you're going to scale it, anything else is capital intensive, but you can turn stuff around quicker. You can turn your stock over quicker if you're sourcing in the US and selling in the US and so forth.
Yeah.
The other thing to say about that is that private label, I think, is in the pure sense, you know, you put your logo on something and do unique packaging, but the product looks exactly the same. Even several years ago, that was a pretty difficult business model to defend. And I think now it's not really as good as the others, actually. I would say that the next level up is customization, which shares a lot of the same characteristics. You've got to make development decisions, but then you still got to source from China most of the time. And you have all the other mechanics that go into private label. So I would flag that up as an additional business model.
What do you you refer to that as? So you refer to the first one as just wholesaling. It is buying.
I guess I would. I would say like wholesale. Yeah.
You refer to the second one as customization. I call it OEM, products. Which isn't right, but it's original. Of course, in the auto parts, since we're using the car metaphor here, the original equipment manufacturing or custom product making is what we're describing, where you go to a China factory or anywhere and you have them uniquely make something for you.
Here's the problem with China. They misuse all the international terms. So if you go to them and get private label done, they refer it to as OEM when it should be ODM, I believe, specifically. So I would just be wary of using the precise terminology with the Chinese, because they will use the precise terminology, but in slightly the wrong way, just to warn you, in my experience. Anyway,
Okay. Yeah. So so let's keep going. So we've got a good collection there. Of course, just to add to that, because it's sort of an entry level strategy, would be garage sailing. And and that is buying new in the box packaged items at garage sales. Typically, this is the strategy, finding new items at garage sales and then selling them online. You can, of course, buy, you know, unique items and sell them on eBay, but a more scalable process is to look for items that are, you know, fairly still newish and packaged. Christmas tree ornaments and on and on and on. I've got a buddy. At some point when we get into stories, I'll tell you about a friend of mine who I taught how to do online selling, and he just made a ton of money with a funny garage sale story. But we'll let that hang for a future episode.
Nice.
Okay, so what else do we got? So we've mentioned a good number. What else is in the universe of business models that are common?
Well, I guess I can see on your list, you put manufacturing and selling items you designed, which I guess is the same as custom products, what I was just saying. But I think it's a natural step forwards from the private labeling thing. I mean, it's going to cost a bit more money and time to develop a product, but a lot of the skill sets are the same, and you can just kind of treat it as an extension of that, I would say.
We've got merch in the world of print on demand, of course. That's which has become all the rage in the last 2-3 years.
It has barriers to entry, though. Not there. That's the problem with that model, isn't it?
Oh, I was just going to talk positively about it.
Oh, sorry, man. Go on. I must apologize. What were you going to say about
reserve commentary about some of these first? I was just going to say I'm running a t-shirt sale right now on Bonfire. It's not merch through Amazon. It's Bonfire, right, which is a different platform. Okay. And it's a t-shirt sale for our charity. And I have a very cute design that was made. I had a poll about the phrasing or wording. Then I had a graphic artist make the t-shirt. So my community helped vote on the phrasing. And this is a fun little t-shirt strategy. If you have a community, have them vote on the phrasing and or word or concept, and then have a graphic artist make it really nice, and then go right back to everybody and say, okay, look at how cute these are. So that's print on demand t-shirt making, and merch is actually a Amazon tool or product for doing this on Amazon. Print on demand t-shirts is common, and then there's obviously other items beyond t-shirts that you can do that way. So
It's to be fair, it sounds like you've done things with quite a nice branding and community led twist, which is better than what most people are doing. Although I shouldn't poo-poo it. I'm just always wary of things without a barrier to entry, because I'm used to getting burned by the level of competition on Amazon. Yeah. I guess if you're off Amazon, it's going to be less intense. So
of course.
So totally I retract my comments in that.
No, but it's a good point, which I think we'll get to a conversation about these later, which is quality rating systems. How do you rate business models and evaluate them is a different topic. But of course, self-publishing is a different one that I... doing books. I was a blogger originally just for my teaching and online, teaching type things. I started as a blogger, and then I got a book deal with McGraw-Hill, and then that led to online courses and that kind of thing. So self-publishing to me of course, Amazon has that on lockdown as well.
Yeah.
through Kindle, but, self-publishing of books or courses, it would be the other angle on that. Online teaching on courses are two great business models. Self-publishing on Kindle in particular went through a heyday season of life, I would say. It probably peaked in maybe 2012, 2014, but it's still certainly there. So those are two others. Udemy is a huge opportunity for online courses. I'm on Udemy, I think, with 11 courses.
Wow, and I was going to say, Udemy's favored e-commerce instructor as well. So I know that
I have been. I think I'm number two right now, which is really upsetting to me. I've been number one for a long time, and so I'm going back and forth with a dude who's a WordPress type advocate. So it's Shopify versus WordPress to the e-commerce space, and we're in Udemy right now. But so online teaching is an opportunity, and there's real money there. It's a real business model, and of course it's scaling. The whole COVID-19 thing is really press the issue of, studying from home, what is happening to the schools, colleges, that kind of thing. So those business models, they're not going away anytime soon. As people learn from home, from their desktops, it creates opportunity for many, many online teachers to rise to the occasion.
Just quickly on that one, you're including that in e-commerce. And so tell me, because this always interests me as somebody who's done both. I've also created courses, nothing like as many or as successful as you, and gearing up to get a book or two out hopefully in the next couple of years. But I always felt that wasn't in the realm of e-commerce. So what is your thinking around that?
I guess that's a great question. The way I look at it is e-commerce is a pretty broad set of business models. I'm framing it as including it because to me, e-commerce just means online transaction of goods and services. So the e-commerce online is commerce electronically, I think is the original, right? E-commerce. And so I guess I would just say that if you've got a digital product, because our whole business model, like if you're wondering what is my business model that we've scaled over time, we run a digital goods marketplace. Pixyfair is actually I'm not a digital goods seller per se. I run a marketplace that is digital goods. So it's a sort of a layer of abstraction there. But digital goods for sure would fall into e-commerce in my mind. So that's online courses. It would also be memberships. Membership models I would include as an e-commerce business model. So we have a membership program with about 1,000 people in it. give us $9 to $14 a month individually. And so that adds up. And that membership model, I would say, is also e-commerce, sure.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. And I'm, by the way, I'm not saying that as a challenge to your legitimacy or
no,
something.
Sure.
On the opposite, yeah. I think actually one of the things you bring to the party, particularly for Amazon sellers emerging, blink into the sunlight, there's a ton of other options for e-commerce. But also, I think you can define, this is an interesting business model question, actually, which is I've stumbled into, which is if you're defining your business or the edges of what you think your business is in the business of doing by product type, including is it physical or digital, there's a sharp demarcation at the edge of that, which would say not include membership, for example, membership sites or courses or ebooks. But I suppose then that comes to another question around the business model, or if you like, what are the edges? Mm-hmm. What do we do here? What do we not do here? Mm-hmm. Are you defining that more by a focus on a particular kind of customer avatar than a particular type of product, would you say?
No, I consider anything that you're selling as your product, whether it's one-on-one coaching, done-for-you services, which would be two more models, a membership program. If you're selling a membership program online, you're an e-commerce operator, and your product is a monthly subscription. Netflix, I would say, is in the e-commerce space.
Yeah, yeah.
I would put all of those types of monthly recurring subscription type businesses that are online transactions in. Those are e-commerce operators. You go into the DNA of those companies and talk to them about their culture. They're e-commerce focused content deliverers. And so membership programs certainly fall into that, in my view. And it's just, I look at it as a product. You know, your product is a monthly recurring membership offer, or your product is a digital ebook, or a product is an online course.
Interesting. And by the way, I think this is a really important conversation, because I think it sort of breaks open a lot of barriers that people put in their brains. And I think, to the question of business model, I'm sorry to distract you from our list.
Sure,
I know
sure,
we're
sure.
most of the way through, but I think this is really important that the difference between focus and rigidity is a subtle one, isn't it? Because you could argue, okay, as you've talked in a previous episode about the fact that you have multiple skill sets to get to grips with as e-commerce sellers, which is hard. And you could argue that getting good at, you know, getting products made in China and importing to USA is enough difficulty, and then you're selling on Amazon and you should focus on that. But then I guess the question of the risk, or the, you know, the characteristics of that aren't good. I mean, I suppose what I'm saying is, what are the sort of justification? This is another episode, isn't it? And what are the justifications for changing business model, or, you know, having physical versus digital?
Well,
this is several episodes.
The first question is, how do you evaluate business models?
Yeah.
And objectively, I mean, if there was a panel of experts, like the, you know, Babson College is a great entrepreneur school, or, you know, you got professors from Stanford Business School or whatever, and they all were sitting in panel and saying to themselves, let's evaluate these business models. What would they say? And so that's a whole, I mean, we can do that work ourselves. We can talk through the pros and cons of different business models without being unkind to anybody. It's not a subjective concern for people to step back and say, what are the merits of my business model? And I think we should definitely do that as a episode where we just talk about the kind of structural metrics that you could use.
Yeah, that would be.
And I've done some of this previously, so I can work through a little bit of what my own thinking has been on this, and we can go through it. And I think it would be really helpful. So.
And unlike my defined by prejudice approach to merch or print on demand, for example.
That. Yeah, I hate that
which
one.
was my particularly ridiculous response to that. But it's interesting, isn't it? We do have, that's exactly the sort
biases.
Of, I was unwittingly an example of sort of prejudice of rigidity about business models or product types or channels that actually I think, you know, is an example of the rigidity of thinking clearly today.
It's easy to judge a model that you haven't done yourself and that you don't see success in, or you've seen concern in. But, you know, all it takes is one honest person saying, let me share with you how I've done this successfully. And if they're not, you know, snake oil salesmen, but if they literally will say, here's how this really works and here are the pros and cons. A lot of times if you hear that, about a different business model, first thing you want to do as an entrepreneur, of course, is start doing that business. But if you just step back and say, no, that's not for me, but at least I can appreciate the merits of the model, I think that's important. So, okay, let's wrap up our list and then we can tee things up for maybe a second episode or keep going here. So coaching is obviously a business model that I would include it in e-commerce. In particular, if you're coaching about e-commerce, it's sort of self-evident. It's your sort of inception in a way there that you're doing an e-commerce work about e-commerce. But I think coaching, online coaching, is an e-commerce business model because it's virtual. I mean, you know, using Zoom and offering coaching to people, you can do it worldwide. In the olden days, of course, you had the big consultancies that would go around and meet in person and camp out at your office for 3 months and charge a gazillion dollars. And now you can literally have somebody spend, I mean, you can literally get, there are platforms where you can get 15 minutes of somebody's time.
Yes, indeed. I'm on one. It's, can't remember what it is called, which is really bad, but they've given me a few hundred dollars over the years. It's not big money, but it's pretty handy for people because it's literally charged by the minute. I should remember what it is. I'll put it in the show notes.
Well, you can dig into that one at some point, but micro coaching like that. But then there's obviously all structured programs like you and I, you know, we both run these. And so in our program, it's a 6 month program, you know, our kind of top level program, 6 month program. It's $1,000 a month currently. And we have a lot of students we meet with, clients all week long. I mean, my schedule is packed with these calls all week long and it's a blast. It's so fun. And so that's a completely legit business model.
By the way, I just want to tee up a really important word you've mentioned, which is monthly recurring revenue. When you mentioned in relation to membership communities, but for both of us, I think we run our coaching the same way. There is magic about that. And I'm just going to say that and leave it out there. And then we just got dive into monthly recurring revenue, because that's a real biggie, I think.
Yeah, I totally agree. We should dive into that one at some point, and membership models and that kind of thing. Okay, so a few other models that I know are viable, that and I have a few of these in operation. Social media influencer. I have a company called The Happy Gardening Life, and I am a social media influencer in the gardening space, believe it or not. Don't laugh, man. Don't laugh. You know, it's a fun little business model to run, and it's not huge, but it is what it is, and I can describe the merits of it. And I think influencer strategies are huge, and they peaked about a year and a half ago in terms of the zeitgeist, but nonetheless it's still a viable marketing strategy for many, many niches and industries, and it's something we teach our clients how to leverage. And so that's a real ongoing business model that I don't see going away anytime soon. And then a few others, advertising and affiliate income. Of course, affiliate income is, you know, sort of the classic 15 year ago shiny object. You could just set up a website, one page website, and make all this money. Just, you know, so that's, but there I am disparaging it. And I'm sure there are people who are legitimate operators.
I think you're returning the favor, because I have made quite a bit of money from affiliate income.
And when
it works, it's beautiful, because it works for the client. It works for the merchant, the person selling it. And it's very straightforward money, because you work really hard to create a channel like a podcast, for example. But then actually when you mention something, and if it's relevant and well delivered, and you've got to be choosy, then it's a win for everyone. But the nice thing is, you don't have to create the course. If it's a course, for example, you don't have to deliver it if it's coaching, which is wonderful.
I disparage the business model that underwrites the whole podcasting universe. Sorry.
That's fine, man. We've done each other. We've both done one of those. So there you go. It just goes to show that we have these mental preconceptions, which, you know, may turn out to be proven. But as you implied gently about my rant about, you know, on-demand printing, well, actually, maybe you should review the facts first, which is a very good point. we can influence each other about that. That's very interesting. Funny.
Let's mention one final e-commerce business model, and then let's maybe tee things up for a future conversation or break the episode or whatever we want to do here. But I think the last one that I would just mention is what you could call the gig economy or service work. A lot of e-commerce transactions now are easily structured on sites like Fiverr and other platforms. 99 Designs is one that I use. I literally have a design project going on 99 Designs almost constantly now. and it's for graphic artists. And so service work, in my view, that's e-commerce business model, because it's a gig economy type deal. You do work from home, do small, you know, small projects. And, you know, that was one of the ones, you know, when my kids were sort of, you know, 3, 4, 5 years ago, 6 years ago, I was teaching them about this stuff. I taught my kids retail arbitrage, and none of them really cared for it.
Cool.
But right. also taught you know, service work on Fiverr in particular. And my son has been doing it for 6 years.
Wow!
How and it just works.
Your son now?
Just 23.
Right.
So it just works for him. So that's, you know, that model is a legitimate business model. Hmm. And I just wanted to mention that one. Yeah.
So. Absolutely. Wow. So there's a lot of business models to absorb. So, I mean, I guess we've got a few things that we're going to have to talk about. I mean, by the way, evaluating a business model, really critical. We're going to have to give that at least its own episode, if not a couple, because I think that's, you've got a deep dive. By definition, we can't sort of try and do that now. Yeah. But one question I'd like to ask about, you obviously have a lot of business models that you are involved in, because you've given examples mm-hmm. of that, and I've mentioned a couple that I'm involved in, including the entertaining conversation between the affiliate marketing myself and the mm-hmm. print on demand publisher yourself. But what would you say is your favorite business model, or one of your favorites, and why?
Yeah.
Just quick tease that one for us.
Digital goods in some form, either mm-hmm. standalone or recurring, has got to be the most elegant and profitable in many, many ways. I mean, there's pros and cons, and you can do it without profit, but digital goods, and then I would add to that the monthly recurring, like membership styled delivery of digital goods. It's fantastic. That would be my top, I think. But I love brands too, and I love physical product marketing. So, but you know, I would say the number one would be digital goods. What about you? What's your number one out of these? What do we list? 15 or 20 here?
Yeah, loads. So. I mean, monthly recurring revenue is a beautiful thing. I mean, I think that certainty of income, the fact that it keeps rolling in with you having to sell again, the fact that it's profitable because, you know, the most expensive thing is acquiring a new customer, but once you've got them, you know, all of that. So for me, that as a delivery model, but that's not quite the whole business model. I would say, you know, I think I've already talked about affiliate income. In a sense, mm-hmm. that can be very badly done, and often is. Mm-hmm. But if you do it with integrity, as some people do, I might mention Pat Flynn, for example, who I find as a listener sells mm-hmm. with integrity. And for goodness sake, he's selling Bluehost, for example, you know, hosting. I mean, that's the most common garden thing, which you would expect to be shoved down people's throats very badly. And if it's done well, what I really like about that is the effective hourly rate, which is James Shramko's mm-hmm. reference point. I was just listening again to his wonderfully direct book, Work Less, Make More, which is typical of him and his Australian accent and swearing a bit. And, you know, he's very to the point. And one of the things he points out is the effective hourly rate. In other words, the amount of profit you make divided by the hours you put in. And for me, when it's worked, and it's quite sporadic sometimes, but affiliate income has been a really lovely thing. And actually, some Amazon sellers that I know who are private label type sellers and design mm-hmm. their own products more than private label, they're custom product makers. They are designers of their own products. And some of them are coming around to the idea of doing some affiliate marketing because the profit levels can be so healthy.
Okay, so this is really interesting, just as a side comment, because I really think that the influencer marketing universe that's grown up in the last, you know, 3, 4, 5 years, it leans into the affiliate marketing strategies. And I think there are a lot of underlying business concepts there that influencer marketing is actually built upon. So I retract anything I said about affiliate marketing. And really, I think that's it's a great point to do maybe a deep dive into, is how do these models really put money in your pocket? What are the expense structures? What are the scalability issues?
Absolutely. Here's a couple of things about affiliate marketing to tease more about that. Number one is people say it like that's, you know, it means you are the affiliate. But of course, you could be the merchant, i.e. the person selling the goods via somebody else. And yes, it can end up being quite expensive if you're giving, for a course, typically 50% mm-hmm. of the revenue. But you don't pay them until they make a sale. So there's a certainty. You don't have an ad spend as an overhead. You have it as a direct cost. costs. Yeah. And I always prefer direct costs to overheads, because in bad times you make fewer sales, but you haven't got the overhead eating you. Yeah. And the other thing is the cash flow of it, because you pay your affiliates after you've built the course and had the expenses of, you know, paying VAs or whatever designers to design the course, or membership or whatever it is. So there's a lot to it, I think. And if it's done well and elegantly, some pretty serious people do it well. Yeah. And equally, some people do it horribly and give it a bad name. So it's worth deep diving into, I think.
You've clearly got some energy and enthusiasm around that topic. Obviously, for sure. A deep dive. Here's what I would tee up as our final sort of a tease for future podcast episodes. I think two important questions would be, is my business model defensible? And then, is my business model scalable to a large number? And so I think those two questions, we could, just to tease it out for next time, really begin to use those as a mental framework where we begin to evaluate business models. And there's many other factors that we can talk about that are great evaluation questions for business models. But let's just mention those and then leave it. And then maybe that'll start the conversation off for next time, where we really dive into, how do you evaluate a business model? How do you understand what to do if you've got one, but you want another one, or you've got one and you think there's another opportunity? How do you juggle business models? How do you stitch them together? Mm-hmm. How do you think about the way in which you can bring all of these things to bear without creating confusion or, you know, being scattered and grow your business in a successful way? I think these elements of the conversation are going to be really powerful for people.
So. Yeah, I really agree. And I love, again, just the way that you look at things from the sort of 60,000 view first before diving in. And that avoids getting platform specific and getting caught in the weeds. And you can sort of see things from a structural level. And coming back to our point from the previous discussion that we had, just to sort of bring it home why this matters, because your contention was that the profit of a business is largely determined by the business model, right?
Absolutely.
So if that's the case, then the choice of business model is critical. It's not just a theoretical nice discussion over a couple of beers after a hard day at the office. It's like structural stuff.
Life and death.
Drive money in your pocket, right? So looking forward to this, man. We've got some juicy topics lined up. We've got so many topics lined up.
Wow.
Looking forward to deep diving into some of this. I mean, like, you know, defending business models, evaluating, that's in itself pretty fun.
Yeah, I think so. All right. Well, let's wrap it up here and then we'll jump into the next conversation shortly. So thanks everybody for hanging out with us. Yeah. We really hope you got a lot of value out of this conversation, and we would love to have you pick up our resources as well.
Absolutely.
So check out the website, The E-commerce Leader, for all that stuff.
Yeah, theecommerceleader.com. And if you're listening more than a few episodes in, we'll be putting things under particular places. So this was going to be under the profit strategy sort of umbrella. So go to www.theecommerceleader.com/profit for specific resources around business models as well as other things.
Love it. Yeah, I love it, man. All right. Thanks, good man. Times. Yeah. Talk soon.
Take care. That was the E-commerce Leader podcast with Michael Veazey in London, England.
Jason Miles in Seattle, Washington.
We offer you free help on our website, including PDFs, videos, and mini courses on topics like traffic, product, and sales channels. Some are for Amazon, most are for any sales channel. To get those and to stay up to date with our podcasts, go to www.theecommerceleader.com. Thanks for listening.